here at Sharp Passes Gallery. It's 4:07 in the afternoon, and it is my great pleasure to have Mike Pitts with us. Of course, he's in State House District Number 14. Part of that is Greenwood, and he always keeps us up to date and always comes on the air and tells us the straight of it. So how you doing today, Mike Pitts?
I'm doing well. Be glad, extremely glad, when next Tuesday gets here.
Next Tuesday, yeah. That's a week from today. We'll either be all celebrating or crying in our beer, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So a lot of people have a lot of things riding on the line. Of course, you are up for re-election, and how's the campaign been going, Mike?
It's going good. It's I've been back out reconnecting with people. It's been difficult because I have a great number of commitments and assignments.
What do you mean? You guys aren't in session right now. What are you talking about, Mike?
No, we're not in session. Well, I serve on the Rural Infrastructure Authority, which is the revised Rural Infrastructure Bank, and Billy O'Dell and I both serve on that, which means a lot to Greenwood County, having two legislators from a delegation this small serving on a seven-member board that affects the entire state. But to get back to the point,
what does that exactly do?
The Rural Infrastructure Authority.
Mm-hmm.
It oversees and awards the grants for water lines, sewer lines, and could be even rural highway development for those designated as rural counties, which Lawrence, Greenwood, and Abbeville all are. So very important that we have two of the members of that seven-member commission sitting right here in this area.
That's true. You know, one of the things that I heard that I thought was very interesting, as they're looking at redoing bridges, the water and sewer becomes an issue. I did not realize that, where the sewer lines or something are in coordination with the bridges.
A variety of issues there. Some, there may be water lines or sewer lines that are actually attached to some of the older bridges.
Right.
And to remove those or redo the bridges, you have to disrupt the sewer service, et cetera. You know, we came close to doing that on Cothran's Bridge between Lawrence and Greenwood County on Highway 72-221. I think it would have been a great benefit to both sides of the lake and would have helped us improve the water quality of the lake had we been able to do that. But that's one of the reasons. The other is the proximity of water lines and sewer lines to those bridges, and not necessarily where they are attached to the bridge, but those bridges, to meet federal regulation, generally have to be raised and widened both, so it requires moving of utilities, not just water lines, sewer lines, gas lines, and other things too.
Sure. You know, one of the things about the bridges and everything, of course, we are fast deteriorating here, not only the roads but the bridges, and of course, what would have been X amount of dollars, X amount of years ago, certainly is a whole lot more dollars. How are we going to handle that today, Mike? Because that has to do with growth and, of course, industry, and the good things that bring industry in is the good roads and that type of thing.
Well, it's not just what brings industry in. It's what supports our number one and number two industries, which are agriculture and tourism. Tourists are not going to come to a state if the roads are bouncing them through the roof when they drive over them.
What's the answer on that?
The second part.
The second
part of the equation is, for especially for those of us in the upstate, is we need the roads and bridges to get our products that we produce in the upstate to market through the port in the low state. It has to travel across the state by truck to leave here, and they're vitally important to us. What's the answer? My answer might surprise a lot of people, but it's something that I have worked on with my former seatmate while he was in the House, and he led on this issue and is currently has a bill in Congress to do that, and that's Congressman Jeff Duncan, and that is drill offshore. If you took the royalties from oil drilling off the shore of South Carolina, you wouldn't have a roads and bridge problem anymore or an infrastructure problem there. Now you have some people that scream, people come to our beaches, that's why the tourists come here, and I agree with that. And that you don't want to see oil wells off the coast, I agree with that too. But the studies have shown that the oil wells would be below the horizon. The second thing they say is we don't want an oil spill on our coast. Neither do I. But you can't use the comparison of what happened in the Gulf and that oil spill with what would be in South Carolina. South Carolina's would be shallow water wells, which means they would be easy to cap, easy to repair, like the ones in the Gulf were before our current president's regulations pushed them into deep water.
Absolutely. And the other issue is, though, are we going to have control of our offshore? Isn't that one thing that the government is trying to take control of the waterways?
When you say government, aren't you talking about that administration in Washington?
Yeah, I am talking about that administration in Washington.
And they just don't want to take control of our oil wells offshore. They won't take control over all natural resources.
Sure, but the fishing and the whole nine
absolutely
yards. I know this is something I've talked about with Jeff Duncan before.
It's something that I have been fighting as the national president of the National Assembly of Sportsmen's Caucuses, which are the natural resource environmental caucuses for the 50 states. And we've been pushing back against those regulations and the control. I've been working extremely close with two states that are vitally important in this issue. One is Texas, the other is Alaska. And if you look at the oil, this will explain two things. It will explain why I support drilling offshore. It will also explain why Obama wants that revenue.
Okay.
The state of Alaska, sitting on the revenue generated by its oil and gas industry, is sitting on a $42 billion surplus.
Wow.
$42 billion surplus, which it may be more by now. When I met with those guys, that was 18 months ago. That's what it was at that point.
Okay. So we could solve a lot of issues for South Carolina. We could solve, it sounds like, a lot of issues for our country.
We could. And like I said, Jeff Duncan has that has a bill in to allow that drilling offshore on South Carolina. I fully 100% support that. Now, you know very well my stance on environmental issues, clean water issues, and I would do nothing that I thought would damage our environment in South Carolina. And heck, how many legislators do you know that have a green tie award from the environmental community and the endorsement of the business community at the same time?
I don't know. Are you one?
I am. And the reason I say that is I have worked very hard at being able to bring two sides together to compromise and make things work. That's what we have to do, is bring all parties to the table and make things work.
And you know, that's a problem down there in Columbia. It's a problem on the federal level, bringing all sides together to work.
Well, you know, people scream partisan politics and that we can't get along on partisan issues. Well, if you take a real look at this election, and whether it's on the national level or the state level, that partisan separation is absolutely a separation of ideologies. It's a separation of whether government is smarter than you are, whether government should be running the show or you should be running the show at home, whether you should be making choices for you, for your family, on health care, education, a variety of other things, or whether the government should. Which one should be doing it? That's what this election's really all about.
So, how do we get people to the table then? You know, I have heard stories of Republicans and Democrats not even wanting to be seen at the same place, whether it's even a little league game or something like this, because they're afraid that a picture would be taken and their constituents would see them talking to a Republican or talking to a Democrat. Regardless of how the election turns out, how do we get people to work together for the common good of this country?
The first thing you have to do, and I'm speaking from experience working with groups, different varied groups in Columbia, the first thing you have to do is find the common denominator, find the issue that we both want to achieve. That generally is not that big of a separation. It's how do we get to that point that is the separation. But I think what's driving the wedge between, the absolute wedge between Democrats and Republicans, both in the state and on the national level, more so on the national level, is the poison of the elections process. It's not the battle over the ideology as much as it is the poison in the election process. It's much like family court, where in a custody case, both parents have to make each other look as bad as possible in order to win. The election process has become that. You try to make the other guy look as bad as you can. My personal philosophy on it is, I'm going to try to make me look good by showing you the issues. And up to this point, I've got to say my opponent's done pretty much the same thing.
That's good. Hey, I'm here with Representative Mike Pitts. He is up for re-election. We are going to hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be back. If you've got a question for Mike, don't hesitate to give us a call, 229-7984. That's 229-7984.
Gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72, Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Right, we're back here with Representative Mike Pitts. He is from the House District number 14. Part of Greenwood is in that. Of course, he's got a lot of other parts in it. But, Mike, we're always glad to have you here with us. And, you know, I've got to ask you about the South Carolina Department of Revenue getting hacked. What do you have to say about that? And then what did they come out with today or yesterday that business returns have been hacked too? This just seems to be a growing story.
Well, at one point it's growing. At the other point it's shrinking. Yesterday also we thought that all the credit card information had been stolen. Now we find out, no, it has not. All the credit card information that was hacked was credit cards that were outdated and canceled. So there's not been credit card information hacked.
That's good to hear.
Two things that I will say about it is, one, no matter how secure you think a system is, someone that is very well adept at a computer and with time on their hands can create problems, whether it's a small virus or whether it's hacking into the system. The most secure system we have in this country is our Department of Defense system, and it was hacked by a 12-year-old kid. So at the right time, with the right amount of luck, they can get in. The issue here, the business part of it, I'm not sure to what the extent is. The governor's office and SLED has been briefing those of us in the legislature. We posed questions back to the governor's office that we have heard from constituents. Like at one today that was asked of me was very simple. At the end of a year, when the security system that you guys are putting in place for me comes back up and it's my turn to pay the tab, how much is it going to cost?
Sure.
Well, I have a security system on mine and have for 2 years now because my credit cards numbers were stolen twice, and I put a system on mine to cover all, including my campaign accounts, so that I would be alerted if there were problems with any of that. And that cost me about $130 a year to have that service, and it's worked very well for me.
Sure.
those are questions that I have posed back to the governor's office, and they are working on it. We were also told yesterday, Ann, that this is an investigation that SLED is leading on for South Carolina, but it also involves the FBI and the Secret Service. So with it being a continuing investigation, and that they do have some good leads on it, well, there's only so much information they're going to give to me.
You know, but the other thing, Mike, is why would we not have an encrypted system for all this type of information?
That's a question I've asked that they've not answered yet.
Well, good. I'm not the only one to ask that question then.
That's correct.
That is correct. All right.
Part of it is an encrypted system.
Mm-hmm.
But it's my understanding at this point that the entire system was not encrypted.
Right.
Now, Ann, with in being totally honest, which I always am with you,
mm-hmm.
I just updated from a $15 flip phone to an iPhone recently that my granddaughter, who's 6 years old, can operate better than I can. So when you start talking about certain things in here, I have to depend on the experts.
Sure. I just was surprised to read that we didn't have encryption on that part of
so
it.
So was I.
And, you know, the expense part of it, but the flip side, the expense of having this happen is far-reaching.
It is. And it will bottom out at $12 million, and $12 million is a lot of money in anybody's budget.
So now we have to ask the question, where will the money come from, since I know we're dealing with a tight budget down there in Columbia?
Well, I know where I would like for it to come from, but I can't answer the question exactly where it will come from. I know it won't come from surplus revenue this year because Obamacare is going to eat all that up.
Absolutely. All right. Well, we are here with Mike Pitts. We're talking about some of the issues, a lot of questions. I know that a lot of people have been upset. They've had to call back and call back and call back, but I guess that's just the way it's working right now. Now, if somebody, did they figure that everybody in South Carolina or just certain people? I was unclear about the cost that they were going to pay for this security, but is that anybody that calls that will get this, or is it just if they look at it and say, oh, it looks like you have been hacked?
At this point, I'm not sure what the governor's office is directing them to do on that. I would think that they would be able to work it out to a point where they only had to cover those that were affected. But with 3.5 million possibilities, it's difficult at this time to say who has and who has not been affected. So I would think it would be prudent to cover any that called in at this point and then weed it out as we go through.
Absolutely. All right. Well, I just did want to ask that question about that. I also, before we go to the news, wanted to talk a little bit about that new hunting preserve in the upstate. I know you're real proud about that, Mike.
I am. You know, quite a few people have come to me and said, we have lost all of our WMA in that particular area of the county, not just the county, but the region. Southern Greenville County had lost all of its WMA. Lawrence County, all of the western part of the county had lost all of its WMA. Part of Greenwood County had lost WMA. And people,
what's WMA?
Wildlife Management
okay.
Area land. It's public hunting and fishing land, basically.
Okay.
And when you say WMA, it draws a connotation that only hunters use it. Hunters pay for it and are the ones that pay for it. But everyone can use it. Bird watchers use it, canoeists, kayakers, and
photographers.
Anyone that wants to use it. A lot of people use it for horseback riding or use public lands at this point for horseback riding. So it covers the gamut. But public access to public waterways and public access to places to hunt it is the biggest issue facing the outdoorsman nationwide, and this
because our population is growing and we're eating up the lands.
A variety of reasons. One is a mindset. There was a mindset 20 years ago. When I was a kid, it was a little more than 20 years ago. But there was a mindset 20 years ago when. you could hunt on people's farms, and they knew who you were.
Sure.
Everyone in my end of Lawrence County knew who I was, knew my grandparents, my parents, and if I was hunting on their land, it was okay. They knew it. Now, those times have changed, and part of it is population shift, part of it's a mindset shift. But basically, if you don't own land or have access to land through a hunting club, you have no place to go. And this particular piece of property cost the taxpayers nothing. It came through...
Now, wait a minute. It cost the taxpayers how much?
Zero.
Zero. Okay.
It came through the Colonial Pipeline spill, and was purchased because of the river frontage that it has, which is quite an extensive stretch of the river, the Reedy River. And through the ownership, the state can protect the riparian zone, protect the quality of the water, and also provide access for folks to utilize.
That's great. Well, and the name of it is?
Cliff Pitts, WMA.
And that was your grandfather, right?
It was my grandfather. My great-grandfather actually lived on that piece of property. I never knew my great-grandfather,
mm-hmm.
My Cliff's father. I never knew him. He died before I was born. But my grandfather was an ultimate outdoorsman, and he taught me not just a respect for the outdoors, for nature, for the environment, but a reverence for it. And he didn't just teach that to me. He was a mentor for two generations, I know, of young men that wanted to hunt, wanted to fish, and just simply enjoyed the outdoors. And that area was an area that he taught a bunch of us what the outdoors was all about.
Now, where is that area exactly for those that don't know about this, since it's relatively new?
It's on Highway 252. At the Reedy River, just below Boyd's Mill Dam, in the Ware Shoals area of Lawrence County.
That's terrific. You know, a lot of people, you know, when we think about being outside and doing these things, we are losing a lot of this type of area, not only here in South Carolina, but across this nation.
We are. You know, I had a couple of people that... asked me why the government should own any land. And I thought back to Teddy Roosevelt. If Teddy Roosevelt had not had a vision, and he also had a huge reverence for the outdoors, if he had not had a vision, we would not have any national parks in this nation. Generations of families wouldn't have gone to Yellowstone, wouldn't have gone to the Grand Tetons, and all the other
sure.
beautiful natural parks that we have. So that's my reasoning for it. There are actually kids that come to the State House, Ann, that think that milk and eggs actually come from Bilo. They don't realize that they come from a farm somewhere. And maybe I should have said Piggly Wiggly, but they don't realize that animals produce that.
Sure.
And we have an entire mindset of folks in inner cities now that, well, I'll give you the question I was asked once. A lady asked me once, why do you have to shoot a deer? I said, I don't have to, but I like to eat venison.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, well, a poor animal has to die for you to eat that venison. Why can't you just eat a hamburger?
And where did the hamburger come from, ma'am?
I did not ask her that question.
I would have been hard-pressed not to.
But that's my point. That's a mindset of a lot of folks that live in inner cities. That wouldn't be a mindset you'd find very often in South Carolina, but it is a mindset that you find in big cities across the nation. And it can be us in the future if we're not careful.
Absolutely. We are here with Mike Pitts. We're going to hear a word from our sponsors. Looks like we blew right through South Carolina news. But, hey, that's okay. This is more interesting stuff anyway. So we'll hear a quick word from our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Ready to race to you. This is Philip Biffle, your Greenwood Edward Jones Financial Advisor. Do you have a recovery plan for your investments? If not, there are several reasons we think you should. While interest rates are very low, certain income strategies and investments could help increase your investment income. Also, many investment portfolios are out of balance at a time when proper investment diversification may be most critical. You also may want to review your portfolio to consider replacing lower quality investments with higher quality investments that may be at protracted prices. No one can control what the market will do next. You can, however, take advantage of investment opportunities that exist today. At the same time, it is important to be well positioned for whatever the market does tomorrow. Please call me, Philip Biffle, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Please call me, Philip Biffle, at 229-0444, or stop by my office today to develop your personalized recovery plan investment strategy. Edward Jones, Making Sense of Investing, member SIPC.
All right, we're right back here at Shark Facet Gallery, 4:36 in the afternoon. Representative Mike Pitts is here with us today, and of course, he's very much looking forward to next Tuesday so he can wake up on Wednesday. Right, Mike?
Absolutely. I hope I wake up on Wednesday.
Well, I know a lot. I know everybody that I've talked to, particularly this last week, they are just weary. It's just weary.
I'm exhausted, and I can tell you, I was speaking to a reporter friend of mine in Columbia at a, following a committee meeting I had a couple of weeks ago, and I said, it's a win-win for me. And she said, a win-win? How do you figure it's a win-win? I said, it's if I win the election, I continue to serve.
Mm-hmm.
If I wake up Wednesday and I've lost the election, I spend more time with my granddaughter, more time with my wife, and I actually get to hunt and fish, which most people that know me know how much I love to do that. And then I told my friend, the reporter, don't let me weigh these scales too heavily.
Exactly. Yeah, because it's a lot of work, and the session actually, even though it is have a prescribed length, you guys do work over a lot.
We do, and it goes back to the when you and I first started talking. You asked me, we're not in session, what have I been doing? We talked about the Rural Infrastructure Authority. I serve on a variety of committees. On my way here today, I got a call that the agency heads committee is meeting in a week. I also got a call from Bobby Hitt that said the new Rural Infrastructure Authority is meeting the day after the election. So committees meet even when we're not in session, and some of them that are active committees meet on a regular basis. That makes a difference.
Absolutely. Now, as far as what we're looking at budget-wise for next year for the state, we have, you know, they talk about on the federal level this fiscal cliff. One of the fiscal cliff aspects is the implementation or more implementation of Obamacare. How will that affect the states, and in particular, how will it affect South Carolina?
Well, we were briefed on that, we being the subcommittee chairman, budget subcommittee chairman, a few weeks ago, on what the actual cost of Obamacare was going to be to the state. And it was presented to us opt-in, opt-out scenario, and Governor Haley has stated she's not going to opt-in. But the mandates already put in place by the feds at this point are going to cost us over the next 8 years $1.2 billion estimated if we opt out. If we opt in, it could go over $2 billion. Now, what we're talking about is an increase to a $5.5 billion general fund budget. So in terms that's easy to understand, you're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of a 20 to 40% tax increase on state taxes to cover that, because only 19 to 20% of the budget is not either already health care or education. So if you decide to take that money from somewhere, you wipe out everything in government except for health, the current health care and education. And I don't think we can do that. I think we need to keep SLED, the Highway Patrol,
I think there are certain services we're supposed to have in a state or a federal government, aren't there?
I agree. The part that bothers me, Ann, is that no official on state level whatsoever had any input into this. And
so it just came down from the federal government.
It came down from the federal government. Now, they put the carrot out there and said that we will pay for it all the first year, and that's not true either. If they will pay for what currently would be in place, what they are not taking into account is what it will cost when businesses simply say it's more cost effective for us to pay the penalty than to purchase insurance and put people who currently have private insurance through their workplace on the public rolls. That will cost us next year estimated $190 million. It just so happens that the current the expected revenue surplus for next year's budget was about $190 million. So we would be starting at ground zero, barring anything going wrong, like a $12 million for a hacker.
Yes, like we've just, I mean, where do you put, how does that fit in the budget now? That's going to be tough, isn't it?
It's going to be a very difficult time. And I can tell you this, as a budget chairman, as an experienced member of Ways and Means, these are decisions that are not easy, and it's going to be hard to work through.
Well, I know last year when the budget came down and the budget line vetoes, and there were things that were taken out, and then there were things that were put back in, such as the arts and some of these other things. What would that do to these type of items again when it comes up next year?
That would be up to the members of the General Assembly to decide. And it's like I said during a previous interview, Ann, I don't disagree with having the Arts Commission. I disagree with having 22 employees to run an organization that simply hands out grants.
Sure.
So money could be saved there, and I agree with the governor that it needs to be structured differently. But I don't think you just simply abandon the arts because it's part of our economic development package. So the answer to your question is, that's why they pay us the big bucks to make those priority decisions.
Are you making big bucks?
According to some people, I am.
I didn't know that. God, what is it you make? You don't make that much. For a lot of extra work, I mean, you know, and you can't survive on that if you had to do that as a full-time job now, could you, Mike?
No, you couldn't. A young man that ran against me 2 years ago, he and I had a lot of discussions on serving in the General Assembly, what it takes, time commitments, and all that kind of stuff. And he said he did not realize how low the salary was. And basically, and I pointed this out to him and I pointed out to other people, there are basically three kinds of people that have the ability to serve in the General Assembly. One is retired. The other is independently wealthy. And the third is someone that whose job can allow them to. It's someone that works for a big law firm, and that law firm will cover the gap and allow them to, or someone that works for an agency like a State Farm or Nationwide that understands that if they've got a member in the General Assembly, they've got an advocate in the General Assembly.
Sure.
Those are the only people that can serve. The average Joe.
That's unfortunate, isn't it?
It is.
It is because of what they could bring to the table.
It is. That's why it's very important that people educate themselves to who they elect to serve in the General Assembly and make sure that they share your ideals and your line of thought. But you lose a lot in that process. How would you change it? There's only one way to change it. And with the demands of the public on a legislator at this point, both time-wise and otherwise, you would have to go to a full-time General Assembly in order to put that individual back in there. Now, there are states that have that. Pennsylvania is one in particular. and they don't pay their legislator $10,000 a year either.
Probably not. No, I'm sure not. Well, we are here with Mike Pitts. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about education because that is another part of what is important. We're going to talk about the economy and jobs, and, you know, then I'm going to ask him about when are they going to get to redoing the tax code here in South Carolina. So don't you go away. We'll be right back.
This year will be a simpler year. One fine gift to last a lifetime from Mother Earth with love. A diamond to light the way and create the energy to keep your love alive. Only at Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood, 229-6276.
Monday, happy days. Tuesday, Wednesday, happy days. Thursday, Friday, happy days. Saturday.
Oh, that's right. We're right back here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We have Mike Pitts here. You know, one of the issues that always comes down to is, of course, jobs, and then, of course, we've got education. And Mike, how do you rectify the two? I mean, we need jobs desperately. We also need good education. McZeiss has done some rather different things. Some people are kind of irritated on the taking money, not taking money. And what should we do? Where are we at?
On which one?
On education.
Well,
which leads to the jobs. We got to have education to have good jobs, right?
We do, we do, and we have the cogs in place for good education. We have the cogs in place, not just when you say education. Most people think about the local high school, but it's a much bigger picture than that. You're looking at Lander University. You're looking at Piedmont Tech. And especially Piedmont Tech in the arena of the current job market and the things that we are drawing to the area, it's training in machinery and those kind of things.
Sure.
The new center that Piedmont Tech opened and is working in conjunction with Ready SC, it's sitting poised to train those people. It's interesting you bring this particular topic up. It's a conversation I had with Bobby Hitt today, the chairman of the Department of Commerce. And we have several companies poised to come to South Carolina right now.
Any of them to come into our area?
Yes.
Yes, okay.
We have three projects that are looking heavily at our area. Do you know what the one common denominator is in all of these right now, though?
What?
November 6th.
The election.
The election. The investors are not going to turn the money loose if this election goes one way as opposed to the other. It's that simple.
I suppose you're saying if President Obama is reelected?
If President Obama is reelected, I think the investment money goes to Central America, and it goes there very quickly.
Well, that's scary.
It is scary. And people say, why would you not invest in your own country? Well, business is only going to survive if it has a bottom line that is sustainable.
You know, the thing about this is profit has become a dirty word.
Profit shouldn't be a dirty word.
Absolutely it shouldn't, but it's become one.
Well, it's become one by design.
Well, I'd like to get some profit just for the record. and a lot of businesses have just basically held on through all this whole time.
Well, look, saying that investment income is a bad thing. Investment income comes from investment, and investment is what provides jobs.
Absolutely.
For all of the workers out there. So if the people with investment capital don't invest or don't invest it with us, then we suffer the consequences.
Sure.
And with the tax structure on the federal level headed where it's going, with the restrictions on the federal level headed where it's going, those investors are not going to invest in our job market.
And that means that there won't be a recovery.
That's my opinion.
Okay.
And it's the opinion of the business people that I've dealt with in the last 18 months.
So education-wise, do we need to, you know, how do we balance what the necessities, the needs of the students versus the money that we have?
Well, the first thing you have to do is define what we want to do with education. Is it going to continue to be a social experiment, or is it going to be designed to teach kids and adults? Because education is a continuing process.
Right.
But especially on the K-12 level, are we going to make it an experiment? Are we going to try to make our schools be all things to all people, which they are not designed to do? Or are we going to get back to the basics of education? Are we going to support our teachers? Are we going to take kids out of the classroom that are creating problems for those teachers and thereby creating problems for kids that do want to learn?
Mm-hmm.
How are we going to handle those situations? And you can't legislate things like parental involvement. You can use the hammer, or you can use the incentive. And so far, neither has worked. So
what is the answer as we go forward? What next year? I mean, you know, I'm sure we'll have a budget, and you were just telling us that if Obamacare comes down the pike and we're going to be looking at a lot of dollars, we're going to have to make decisions about dollars. What are the dollars for education? I know the lottery has been a phenomenal source of helping particularly higher learning centers to have money available for that. But in that K through 12, who should be making the decisions about what happens with education? On the local level, should monies just come into from the state or from the Fed? Should government money come in from the federal level?
Normally, I would say yes, the local school board should be the one making those decisions. But then you take a look at how different school boards operate and how different school districts operate.
Mm-hmm.
And some school districts do a very good job of fiscal accountability and success, and others do not. Some school districts have had to lay teachers off, while other school districts have not. And it's not based on one being so much wealthier than the other. Quite often it's in how those are managed. So I think it still has to be a cooperative effort. I think decisions have to be made both on the state level and on the local level. Now, if you want to talk about the federal level, I can't find anywhere in the Constitution that the Fed should be involved in education to begin with.
Are you saying that's a big department we could just shut down?
I'm saying that money would be better used sending it in block grants to the state and going to the classroom than in the bureaucracy that's housed in Washington.
Absolutely. I don't see how a federal agency that far away can know what the situations are on local levels and state levels.
Well, that's the same scenario that you use by saying it's people in the local area have a better idea of what they need than Columbia does. But I come from the local area to Columbia, and the other part of that equation is you have to have some uniformity at some point. And when you have one district that pays $8,000 to do a job and another district that pays over $50,000 to do the same job, that just doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't. So how do you do that? Do you say that from the state level that these jobs are worth this much?
Well, it's not necessarily that these jobs are worth this much, but what level of individual are you putting at that particular position can be the key. When you start delving into education budgets, it becomes one of the hardest things to read that you'll ever find. And just being blunt, there's a lot of camouflage in some of those budgets. Some are very open and some are not. Some are very transparent and some are not.
Absolutely. Well, we had a call from David Meyer. He says, your opponent presents you as a far-right bully type at his club speeches, but I'd like your answers and demeanor. Are you a bully?
I don't think so.
Okay. do you think there's only one way to solve something, or do you think it's just your way, or that's it, or what do you think, Mike?
If I thought there was only one way, I wouldn't have been successful in the General Assembly for the last decade on passing legislation. You don't pass legislation with a bully, with a ball bat or a hammer. You pass legislation, or you get your ideas through on the back of other people's legislation by bringing opposing ideas together and to the same table. And I've used the example of the child custody bill that was my baby.
That was a big one for you.
Yeah,
that was a very big one. I remember you when you were first working on that one.
Yeah. Well, the Chief Justice herself said it was the most important piece of family court legislation passed in over 50 years. So.
And what was that? What exactly was that bill?
That bill defined what joint custody actually is. There was no statutory definition of joint custody. And it also began the process by putting in parenting plan and opening the door for mediation to try to take some of the adversarial approach out of the family court system. It goes back to a statement I made earlier in the analogy I used of two parents fighting for custody of a child. They have to make each other look as bad as possible.
Correct.
Because under the old system, it was a winner and a loser. Under this system, they're degrees. So two people going in and looking at joint custody have an ability to show what they can do as a parent, not have to prove the other parent out to be as bad as possible.
This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. We're going to continue. I just needed to say that, Mike. That bill has been approved. It's gone through?
Yes, that bill passed and was signed by the governor. And I have, during the interim, been working with members from the Bar Association and some other groups to take another step in that direction. I'm also have been working with the victims' rights advocate and domestic violence advocates to take a look at other parts of the process, other keys in child custody. And that has become a mission for me is the welfare of the children of the state, because I don't think we do a very good job of protecting them, whether it's through DSS, whether it's through the guardian ad litem program, and a variety of other things. I think there are better ways to do it, but to get those different parties to the table and find those takes time and energy, and basically that's my mission in the future.
Absolutely. Well, Mike Pitts, I always enjoy sitting down and talking to you. I want to give you a couple of minutes here. Can you believe it's 5:01?
I couldn't. I looked up at the clock when you started.
I would like to give you 2 minutes to tell people, I think you just told us, one of the reasons you want to go back to Columbia, but why else should you be reelected?
Well, I have spent a decade now working on issues with Greenwood Lake, which is a primary importance to both Lawrence and Greenwood counties. It is a source of drinking water for Greenwood County, and everybody knows the benefits of it recreationally and property value-wise, et cetera. I want to continue that fight and continue moving in the direction of making sure that it's clean and keeping it that way. Also, the experience that I have and the positions, the key leadership positions that I've attained, are beneficial to our area. And I think the leadership and the experience are both going to have to come into play with what our state is facing, both budget-wise and what's on the horizon, no matter what happens in this coming election on the federal level.
And, of course, you are a straight shooter, and that's what I like about you the most, Mike Pitts.
Well, thank you.
Absolutely.
Do you think I'm a bully?
No, I don't think you're a bully. Not at all. I don't know where that came from. It says from your opponent. So, but and education, which I know is one of his big issues, is an important issue.
Absolutely. If education weren't an important issue, we wouldn't spend 40% of our budget on it.
40% of the budget. That's almost half.
That's if 40% of our general fund dollars goes to K-12.
That's huge.
It is huge.
Important. But we do need to get it to the point where it's doing the most good, and I would believe that you would think it's for the kids.
Absolutely. It's in the classroom, and there are ways to approach that. I think a more streamlined management system would help education tremendously.
I'm sure it would. Thank you, Mike Pitts, and good luck next Tuesday.
Thank you.
All right. Bye-bye, everybody. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. I'll be back tomorrow afternoon. Who's on the agenda tomorrow afternoon? I do believe on November 1st it is Mike Rake, so we'll look forward to talking to him tomorrow afternoon. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.